Hello, this is Sharon, welcoming you to my reading of the Pantograph for today, Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page. There's a nice picture, and it says coffee with a cop. Bloomington officers met public at Denny's Donuts. Police Chief Jamal Symington spoke with residents during a Coffee with a Cop event that was held yesterday, Tuesday, August 18th, at the Denny's Donuts and Bakery at 1107 South Main Street in Bloomington. Anderson convicted of teen's murder. Stowers shot at 2022 party on Mill Street. Tommy Yale M. Anderson has been convicted of first-degree murder in the shooting death of Kanye Muzzy Stowers after a week-long jury trial. Anderson, 22, of Hampton, Georgia, was charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, and aggravated discharge of a firearm in the 2022 fatal shooting of 17-year-old Kanye Muzzy Stowers of Peoria. The trial began on Monday, August 10th, on the victim's birthday, and lasted through the week with presentation of the state's case before Judge Jason Chambers. By Friday, both the defense and the prosecution rested their cases. The teenaged victim was fatally shot on April 8, 2022, during a house party in the 400 block of East Mill Street in Bloomington. He died from a single gunshot wound, which struck him in the back before traveling through his lung, heart, and aorta and exiting through the upper left chest, pathologist Dr. Scott Denton testified during trial. The prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney Aaron Frederick and Assistant State's Attorney Alexandra Williams, argued Anderson was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. In his closing argument, Frederick told the jury Anderson's guilt was proven by surveillance video, cell phone location data, Snapchat posts, evidence recovered at scene, witness testimony, and Anderson's diss track written about the shooting. Defense attorney Jennifer Patton argued none of the evidence was concrete enough to secure a verdict, noting wavering witness testimony and other explanations that would make Anderson innocent. The parties gave closing arguments Monday morning and left the case in the jury's hands by lunchtime. Within 2 hours, the jury returned a verdict finding Anderson guilty on all counts. He faces 20 to 60 years in prison, and he's eligible for an enhanced longer sentence because the jury found Anderson used a firearm to kill Stowers. Anderson is scheduled for a sentencing hearing at 1:30 p.m. October 27th. Stowers didn't have a problem with anybody, Frederick told the jury during his closing argument. In fact, there were no arguments, no fights, until a group of people showed up. The prosecutor recounted several witness interviews and testimonies about the April evening shooting and about five unfamiliar masked men who arrived at the party together. "And you saw how that party ended," Frederick said. Frederick said Anderson had been in Bloomington during the shooting. He possessed a distinctive Polymer 80 handgun, which was capable of firing the ammunition recovered from the scene, and he was with others who traveled to the Mill Street residence shortly before the shooting. Patton, on the other hand, said the witness testimony was nowhere consistent, referencing the many times witnesses told the court they did not remember or could not recall the events of that night. She argued the state's witnesses were unreliable and at some points obviously not truthful. "Is that the truth Or is that also some version of the truth? Patton asked during her closing argument. The defense attorney noted many of the witnesses described the masked figures as wearing all black, but Anderson's associates were not wearing all black, as shown in the cell phone and social media evidence the state presented. Patton also said witnesses' descriptions of the gun did not match the gun Anderson had in his possession at the time of the shooting. And instead of witnesses lying to protect Anderson, Patton pointed the finger elsewhere, asking the jury to consider who else they could be protecting. Frederick argued the two fired shots proved the shooter's intent to kill, and he referenced the song written by Anderson and recovered from the defendant's phone. The defendant, in his own words, tells you who is responsible, Frederick said. He named it April Fools, the same month Kanye was shot and killed. Patton disagreed, arguing that song does not convict my client. She said many songs describe incidents that are not true. And musicians also speak about events without having been involved in them. In his rebuttal, Frederick said, even if the jury disregards the rap song, the prosecution had still proven his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. It was not made up. That would be the biggest coincidence in the world, Frederick said, noting the song was created 2 weeks after the homicide without a coroner's report or autopsy. He knew exactly what he did, and he wrote about it. After the jury returned its guilty verdict, Tamika Love, mother of Kanye Stowers, expressed sadness for her son's death, but also exultations for Anderson's conviction. My heart is pounding, Love said. I know my son is smiling. All that fight from 2022 to 2026, it was worth it. It was worth the outcome. He's saying, Mama, you did it. Love said she felt blessed knowing God answered my prayers. She expressed her thanks to the Bloomington police chief, Bloomington officers, as well as Illinois State Police forensic analysts who helped to catch her son's killer. My family can sleep in peace now, knowing that he's found guilty. His sisters, his brothers can sleep now. I can sleep, Love said. In a statement Monday afternoon, Chief Jamal Symington commended the work of the McLean County State's Attorney's Office and his officers. The loss of a son and a loved one is the most painful experience a family can face, he said. Our officers are often called upon to find those accountable for those losses. In this and many other cases, they have dedicated their lives to pursue justice for victims, their families, and our community. Stowers' mother called Anderson's song lyrics like a slap in the face. He doesn't have any sympathy, no remorse, no heart, Love said. She described her son as talented and hardworking, with a bright future ahead of him. To her and to many others, he mattered and he was loved, she said. He'd give you the shirt off his back. He wouldn't hurt a flea, Love said. She encouraged others who are facing similar pain to always stay strong, to put pressure on the media, police, and prosecutors, and to never give up. She said her perseverance helped lead her and her family to this verdict. To all the mothers who are in the same shoes looking for the murderer, if I can do it, you can do it, Love said. Victory, justice, Kanye, she said, raising her fist toward the sky above with each syllable. Today's flick fact question. Can you name the Bloomington man who was a close friend of Abraham Lincoln, but became so arrogant and unpopular with railroad wealth that even his wife was apparently relieved by his death and reportedly asked the undertakers to carry his coffin out the back door so it won't damage the carpet? The answer is it was Ashel Gridley, whose name still graces a McLean County town. He died in 1881 at his home at 301 East Grove Street, today an apartment complex known as the Oaks. Be especially careful on the carpets when you're there. And how time flies locally from the past pages of the Pantograph. 100 years ago, on August 19, 1926, the Reverend Loyal M. Thompson, a graduate of Illinois Wesleyan University in 1910 and pastor of the Methodist Episcopal Church at Lakin for the past 8 years, will be the speaker at the Rotary Club today at the Bloomington Counter Club. Thompson was a star twirler in his college days at Wesleyan. 75 years ago, on August 19, 1951, at least 83 elm trees in Bloomington show the fatal signs of phloem necrosis for the first time. Report from J.C. Carter, plant pathologist, revealed. Carter has been the most conservative estimator of elm tree damage since the city's elms were first struck by the blight in 1947. 50 years ago, on August 19, 1976, the Card Mart at 413 North Main will close at the end of this month, Mrs. Mary Vossler, Card Mart proprietor, said. Vossler, who runs the shop in partnership with her husband Raymond C. Vossler, said increased postage costs evidently caused a decline in greeting card mailings. And 25 years ago today, August 19, 2001, Roger Aiken hasn't been among the major Twin City newsmakers during the past year, and that's just fine with him. The Bloomington police chief promised few, if any, changes last year when he filled a void left by the sudden death of Dennis O'Brien, who died just 3 weeks into his tenure and left the department understandably shaken and administratively inexperienced. Instead of change, Aiken concentrated on stabilizing the department and his administration. So what has Bloomington's top cop altered in the 105-officer department since he officially took over on August 24, 2000? I'll be quite honest, not a lot, said Aiken, 49, who has 23 years with the police department. But don't think we're sitting here stagnant, because we're not. We just needed to shore up the edges. Normal Town Council. Home business limits pulled. Zoning change to limit customer visits cut from ordinance update. Normal officials stripped a proposed prohibition on customers and students visiting home-based businesses from a zoning ordinance on Monday after residents warned that the broad language could jeopardize established low-impact businesses. The Normal Town Council then approved the remainder of the zoning package. Mayor Chris Coos said every reference to home-based businesses had been removed from the revised ordinance and that removed language would not be voted on Monday. Coos said the town will seek additional input from home business owners and review practices in other communities before deciding whether to bring back new language. I'm not saying we're coming forward with anything, Coos said, adding that the town would value input from affected business owners. The original proposal was one part of a broader zoning package that the town's planning commission recommended on August 6th. No member of the public testified at that hearing. Following this, the town staff described the home occupation provision in the council agenda packet as a clarification that customers could not visit a home-based business. The proposed language would have prohibited customers, clients, patients, pupils, students, vendors, and other business visitors from coming to a residence in connection with a home-based business. Employees working remotely would have been exempt. Sales, services, consultations, lessons, and appointments would have been required to occur off-site or through phone, mail, or electronic communication. Christy Mullins, who said she has operated a registered long-arm quilting business from her normal home for 15 years, told the council that her customers make occasional appointment-only visits to drop off and retrieve quilts. Mullins said she often meets customers at their vehicles or has them leave quilts on her porch. Her business does not create excessive traffic, noise, or parking problems, she said, and renting commercial space large enough for her quilting machines would not be financially practical. There should be room in our zoning code for quiet, responsible home businesses, Mullins said. She urged the town to regulate home businesses according to their effects on residential neighborhoods, rather than simply whether a customer ever comes to the property. Normal resident Phil Hoffman called the proposal overreaching, citing his mother's former home piano teaching business and his wife's work as a math tutor who sees several students a week at their home. Hoffman also raised concerns about licensed in-home child care providers. City Manager Pam Reese later clarified that child care does not fall under the zoning provision and would not have been affected by the discarded language. Council Member Kathleen Lorenz also questioned how the language with such broad potential effects had moved through the Planning Commission and into the council packet without more scrutiny. Reese said the proposal had gone through the public hearing process, but she acknowledged the concern is justified. She added that staff will gather more public feedback and determine whether the town should return with modified language, if at all. It's certainly no one's intent to put any businesses out of business, Reese said. Koss later acknowledged the town's error. We made a mistake, he said. The revised ordinance approved on Monday retains changes addressing digital signs, new, replaced, reconstructed, converted, or substantially altered electronic signs will need photo cells, ambient light sensors, or similar technology that automatically adjusts brightness. The ordinance does not establish a numerical brightness limit. According to the council agenda, the town is still researching industry standard regulations in nearby communities after receiving an increasing number of complaints about bright digital signs. The new requirement ensures recently installed signs can comply with brightness and operating standards adopted later. Another change adds a reference to Illinois' People Over Parking Act, which limits when the town may require a minimum number of vehicle parking spaces near qualifying transit hubs and frequently served bus corridors. The ordinance also allows buildings of 25,000 square feet or less in general business B1 districts to be used entirely for storing goods, supplies, furniture, or equipment. Current rules allow self-storage businesses, but did not permit a building to be used solely for storage, supporting a business at another location. Another approved changes address exterior mounted battery energy storage systems, cemetery water requirements, building height definitions, and landscaping standards. Landscape waste site to be fenced. Town to regulate drop-off to curtail contamination. Normal moved on Monday to end around-the-clock access to its landscape waste drop-off site, approving a $65,230 fencing contract intended to deter illegal dumping and contamination. The town council approved the contract with Hulin Fence Company of Goodfield. The formal actions cover fencing and gates at the site at 1301 Warner Street, while the Public Works Department plans broader operational changes once the property is secured. City Manager Pam Reese said the drop-off site has operated on the honor system and that's not working anymore. She said the controlled access system would be similar to how Bloomington currently operates its landscape waste facility. The town has operated the site for several decades, allowing residents to bring landscape waste there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Material delivered to the site, along with landscape waste collected at the curb, is taken to Illinois State University Farm in Lexington and then converted to compost. According to the council agenda, the town staff said contamination has increased significantly in recent years because the understaffed site is being used by contractors and other people who do not live in Normal. Public Works employees spend an estimated 8 to 12 hours per week during peak season removing illegally dumped material. Despite those cleanup efforts, some contaminants reached the ISU composting operation and then created additional work at the farm. Materials found at the site have included household garbage, motor oil, fuel, paint, pesticide, plastic bags, concrete, brick, and metal. Staff also cited the dumping of excessive quantities or too large chunks of brush and tree limbs. The contract calls for about 550 feet of 8-foot galvanized chain link fencing topped with barbed wire. The project also includes one 30-foot double swing gate and two 24-foot double swing gates. Once the fence is installed, Public Works plans to limit access to Normal's residents and inspect incoming loads for prohibited materials. The site would be open during regular business hours, with longer hours on selected days and Saturday hours during peak season. Employees would also provide information about proper disposal when they find contaminants in a load. Town officials did not announce exact operating hours, how residents would verify their eligibility, or how many employees would staff the site. Reese said drop-offs would be limited to Normal residents during specified times and days of the week. Public Works and the town's communications department plan an outreach campaign before the changes take effect. It will include updated operating hours, traffic flow maps, and information about acceptable and prohibited materials. Full implementation of this new plan is expected in late 2026 after the fencing is installed. The site is intended for Normal residents, although Illinois State University and the McLean County Unit 5 School District also have agreements allowing them to use it. The council packet did not explain how those agreements would operate after access is restricted to residents. Normal clearing storm debris. Normal Public Works crews collected about 8,500 cubic yards of storm debris in 4 days after repeated storms moved through the area last week, nearly matching the amount that was gathered during the entire month of April. Town officials shared the figures during an informal conversation after Monday's normal town council meeting. Another 48-hour extension to an emergency declaration connected to Normal's storm response had just been signed and would be posted on the town's website. Such declarations, which can be signed and extended by Normal Mayor Chris Coos without council action, allow Normal to enact emergency response plans such as worker overtime. They said crews are continuing to collect debris. For comparison, Normal collected about 9,900 cubic yards of debris during all of April, including 7,000 cubic yards attributed to the tornado on April 17th. Storms in June generated about 7,100 cubic yards over the entire month. The latest 4-day cleanup has already surpassed the amount from either month. Council members used their closing comments Monday to praise town employees and residents for responding to the latest storms. Council member Karen Smith said town employees worked until daylight, ran out, clearing brush and other debris. She said residents also used chainsaws and rakes to clear streets, locate covered storm drains, and help keep vehicles away from flooded areas. "It was like loaves and fishes," Smith said. "One person came out with a chainsaw and rake and was joined by others helping out to clear the streets." Mayor Chris Coos said employees from nearly every town department mobilized during what he described as a difficult week. Coos listed Public Works, Parks and Rec, police, fire, inspectors, administration, and information technology among those departments involved in the response. "It was just incredible," he said. "The challenges that each of these departments faced and how they rose professionally to shine is a real testament to the quality of people that we have working here." Bloomington also continued its emergency response Monday. The Bloomington City Council voted to extend 2 local disaster emergencies for 30 days following Thursday's rain and high winds and Saturday's heavy rain and flooding. Normal officials did not provide a final estimate on how much debris remained or when the town's storm-related collection would be completed. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the pantograph for Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. Please stay tuned.